and welcome to the MBOM podcast, where you'll learn to master the business of yoga. MBOM is a proud part of the Wander Barn podcast network, and I'm your host, Amanda Kingsmith. I'm a 500-hour registered yoga teacher, a yoga business coach, and a total business geek. Here at MBOM, you'll learn everything you need to know to create a sustainable yoga business by learning from myself and guests from around the world about how they built their yoga businesses. And about how you too can become a successful yoga teacher, studio owner, and much more. All right, let's dive in. Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Mastering the Business of Yoga. I'm super grateful that you're tuning in for this episode of the show. I think this is going to be a really fun episode. I know I loved recording this, so I'm really excited that it's live and that everyone gets to listen to it now. Before I tell you a little bit more about our guest, I just wanted to give a little shout out to the sponsor for today's episode, Offering Tree. If you have listened for a while, then you've heard a ton about Offering Tree. They are definitely my number one software recommendation for yoga teachers. Just because of everything that they offer, you can really do everything that you need with your yoga business in one place, one platform. And I love the people. I love how responsive they are to individuals giving feedback. They're constantly making updates and so much more. So you'll hear more about them in a little bit. But if you do want to go check them out, head on over to offeringtree.com/MBOM. All right, today on the podcast, I am really thrilled to be joined by Pamela Crane. Pamela is a yoga teacher with a master's of science in yoga therapy and over 35 years of experience. She runs an online yoga business supporting athletes, dancers, yogis, and other high performers through the practice of yoga therapy. She is also the host of the Yoga Pro podcast. And in this episode of the podcast, Pamela shares her journey with yoga, including getting her master's in yoga therapy and how that shifted her teaching. She also shares what it's been like to run an online yoga business well before the pandemic happened, how she supports her clients through yoga therapy, business lessons she's learned through her career, and much more. So we have a ton to talk about. And like I mentioned, Pamela has been teaching yoga for a number of decades at this point. She is super knowledgeable and super experienced. So she had a ton of wisdom to share with myself. And it's one of the reasons that I'm so excited to share that here with you. So without further ado, let's get into it. Here's Pamela. Welcome to the podcast today, Pamela. I'm really excited to have you here with me today.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm stoked to dive in with you. And I'm curious, where are you joining us from?
I'm in San Diego. Currently, I'm a military spouse. So we've been here for 4 years and not sure how much longer we have here. So I'm just soaking it all in as much as I can, being present in the moment, you know.
Yeah. I have amazing weather and food and stuff like that, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So if you get a transfer to like North Dakota or something, it's going to be a big change.
That'll be a very big sad maker.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm curious how that kind of moving around plays in with your business and your career, but maybe we'll get there in a little bit. I want to hear your story getting into yoga. Can you tell me about kind of your backstory with yoga?
Yeah, sure. So I had a lifetime as a dancer, performer, and things like that. And I also suffered from fibromyalgia. And I found myself in the space where I was so depressed. I was so anxious. And like, I was either on the couch depressed or wringing my hands anxious and in so much pain that I felt like I just didn't know why I was in this life. And it was a really, really dark time. And I started going to a yoga class in a gym, $5 drop-in yoga class. And I just started noticing feeling better and feeling different. And it was, to me, I always say yoga saved my life, because I just don't think if I hadn't found that I would have been able to make it out of those dark times. Yes, I had therapy, and yes, I had friends and all of those other things, but nothing changed me like this yoga practice that I was going to twice a week. And it was predominantly a physical practice, but there was Shavasana, and I found my peace. And what I noticed was I started having more good days than bad days, because before yoga, it would be, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can get out of bed. I just don't know if I can make it today. I remember one time being curled up in a ball in my principal's office. I was teaching at a high school, and like curled up on the floor in a ball in her office. And just like, I just don't know. Luckily, she was also a counselor in her previous life. And I just was like, I just don't know if I can do this life anymore. And finding yoga, finding my inner resource, finding my inner fire, my guidance was everything. That was probably, I don't know, almost 30 years ago. And ever since then, it's been a journey. I didn't just start practicing yoga and all of a sudden I was feeling great. It was this process, right, of going to yoga over months and realizing one day I realized, wow, I'm having more good days than bad days. Whereas used to, it was mostly bad days and I would have a good day. And then I would have this good day and I would do too much and then it would be more bad days. And so finding that space of, wow, I'm having more good days and realizing, I think it's the yoga. And so we just wanted to keep doing that. And then I got a yoga teacher training, 200 hour. And then I got a master's degree in yoga therapy. And it just was this progression that just felt really organic and natural for me. It wasn't anything that I felt like I forced or, I didn't just wake up one day and go, oh, this is it. It was kind of a slow burn for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for sharing all of that. That's a really beautiful story. I'm curious, was there somebody right from the beginning that like recommended yoga or like, how did you discover it? Cause when you're talking about at that time, I feel like yoga was just way less mainstream than it is now, right? Like a lot of doctors now will say like, oh, you're suffering from like physical or, mental, emotional ailments. Like, why don't you try yoga? And I feel like, back in the day, it wasn't like that. Even 10 years ago, it wasn't like that. 20 years ago, it certainly wasn't like that. So I'm curious, like, how did you like hear about yoga?
Yeah. I don't remember how I heard about it. I think maybe I was going to that gym for like fitness, and I was trying these things, but then I would go home hurt or feeling so much pain. And I think that's when I saw, oh, they're doing yoga in there. And so I went in and thought, well, can't hurt. Nothing else is working. I had tried so many medications and I was very lucky at the time because, what was it, 27 years ago, most doctors weren't acknowledging fibromyalgia as a thing. Mm-hmm. But I was really lucky to get a diagnosis, to get someone who knew what this even was and who believed it was something. Because at that time, people didn't even really think it was a thing. And so, but I tried all the medications, everything, nothing worked for me. So finding this practice that I could do that really felt good in my body and having been a dancer, the postures came fairly easy for me, mm-hmm. In a way. So that part of it, I think I liked because I felt like there was a little bit of success in this body that felt so broken and used up. So having this moment of, I can do this. I can sit like this. I can stretch my legs and bend forward because that's what I had been doing. But then having this other element of breathing into it and doing, and I used to say, I wish I'd found yoga when I was a young dancer. I would have been a different dancer. Mm-hmm. I would have been so different because learning to breathe with the stretch, learning to feel into your body, a lifetime of numbing. And then I'm waking up to my body in my, late 20s, early 30s. It's kind of, you're like, golly, I wish I would have found this so much sooner, but also grateful to have it. Now.
Yeah, for sure. I hear you. Yeah, I definitely feel similarly, but I feel like it comes at the exact time we need it, right? So mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. And I'm curious, so you said you got your teacher training and then you did a master's of yoga therapy. Did you just dive in with teaching? Like, did you just kind of start your career at that point?
When I got my 200 hour, it was funny because the 200 hour training that I did, I was the only person in there who had really a lot of experience as a teacher because I had been teaching dance my whole life. I did stop for a while and had a career as a broadcast journalist and then, went back to teaching. So the act of teaching came so naturally to me. And I had a strong yoga practice when I did my 200 hour. So I already had been a teacher for so long. I had a strong yoga practice. So I hit the ground running with teaching. That was not, and actually I had been teaching yoga stuff with in my dance classes with my dance students. I just didn't call it yoga. Just sneak it in the back door.
Just sprinkle a little in for them.
So I had already been using and teaching yoga, but the 200 hour, you know, I felt like I really needed that. And so I didn't, I was teaching simultaneously, really. So yeah, but then I did my yoga therapy training, and that was transformational for me. It was, I was saying yoga saved my life, you know, these classes that I was going to, but yoga therapy transformed it. It was just so crazy to me how much there is to yoga. And what I realized was, I mean, when I graduated my 200 hours, I'm like, oh yeah, you know, now I can teach yoga officially or whatever. And I know all this stuff. And then I graduated from yoga therapy school and I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much more to learn. You don't realize how much you don't know until you kind of dive into this sort of deep dive into the philosophy. And that's where I hang out the most now, is in the philosophical principles and the meditative and the breathing, more so than the postures. And sometimes I'll have clients say, we didn't really do any postures. And I always say, well, that didn't seem to be what you needed. Is that what you want? And they'll go, no, I just was curious. Because people come in thinking, oh, we're going to be touching our toes. And I've got them on their back with their legs on a chair, meditating for 45 minutes. So it's just funny how all of these tools, you think, oh yeah, this yoga is great, these postures are amazing, and I feel so good. And you do. And then you find out, like, you peel back the onion and you, or whatever, you get to the center of the Tootsie Roll Pop and you're like, oh, this is where it's at.
Hey, yoga teachers, we're just taking a quick break from the podcast to talk a little bit more about Offering Tree. Offering Tree is my number one recommendation for yoga teachers for all things yoga business. And this is because you can truly do everything that you need in your yoga business all in one platform. And if you've been listening over the last couple of weeks, then you would have heard lots of updates that Offering Tree has been making. And this update that they've made is a huge one. The Offering Tree platform now integrates with everything via Zapier. Your Offering Tree account can now integrate with all of the other tools you use in your business. So if you have other things that you've been using that you don't want to switch over to Offering Tree, things like ConvertKit, MailChimp, thousands of others, you can now integrate it to the platform via Zapier. So one of the things that I love about Offering Tree, and there's so many that I could talk about, but is that they have the ability to integrate. So like I've shared with you guys, I moved my courses over to Offering Tree earlier in 2023, and I have them just linked and embedded onto my website, which is through WordPress right now. So if you have something like a WordPress website, yet you need a booking and scheduling software, Offering Tree's got you covered. If you want to have everything over on Offering Tree, yet you love using ConvertKit or MailChimp because you've learned the platform and your audience knows and loves it as well as you, then now you can integrate that via Zapier. This integration with Zapier is available for people who are on Pro and Studio plans. To find out more about the plans, the pricing options, and more, you can head on over to offeringtree.com/MBOM. You can get a free trial there if you've not already tried Offering Tree, as well as you can sign up and get an extra little discount for listening to the show. Once again, that's offeringtree.com/MBOM. All right, now back to the episode.
Yeah, this is the good stuff. Yeah, I really resonate with that too. I actually remember taking my 200 hour and being like, you know, you kind of feel like, okay, I'm going to take this training, and then it's like, tick, I'm like a yoga teacher, right? Like I've learned the things I need to learn. And I remember being like, wow, the well is really deep. Like, I don't think I'll ever know everything that there is to know about this practice. And that both really intimidated me and also really inspired me, because it was like, how, like, I feel like there's just so much opportunity, right? Opportunity to learn, opportunity to grow, opportunity to deep dive into these teachings and the practice. And I was like, cool, I don't think I'm ever going to get bored of this.
I'm always learning. I have so many books and I'm always cracking them open. And one of my favorite things to do, so I do a lot of different things in my business, but one of them is I work in an intensive outpatient program for active duty military and spouses. And my favorite thing to do is just grab one of these books and open it up and take it, and I'll read a passage and I'll build a whole practice around just something in one of my yoga books. And every time I do that, I get a little nugget or something that maybe I didn't know, or something that I had learned and forgot. And because you can't remember everything. Well, I mean, at my age, I'm lucky to remember where I am sometimes. To me, it's about the exposure, and I learn it and I know. And then, but sometimes I do have to go back and refresh and kind of pull out the book and go, oh yeah, I completely forgot about this thing. Or how come I didn't say this back, you know, a week ago when this came up or whatever. So yeah, it's so vast, like you said, and there's so much to always learn, but I think that's the yogic mind, right? It's always being open to learning and always kind of feeling like there's more for you. Not like you're not enough and don't know enough, not in that way, but in that there's always something coming, and sometimes it always comes at the right time. You know, it, like you said, sometimes the thing that I needed to learn is what I needed to share with these guys today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, I love that. I'm curious if you can give us kind of like the high level overview of your career. Obviously, there's probably a lot of stuff you've done, but maybe kind of give us the sort of, yeah, high level overview of what you've done, and then we can dive into what you're doing now.
Yeah, I've done a lot of things. My husband says that I have a particular set of skills, in the words of Liam Neeson. I started out dancing, teaching dance. Then I went to college. I got a degree in broadcast journalism. I worked in television news. I worked in on-air promotions, radio, network radio, hosted a radio show. And all mixed into that was doing theater and performing. And so I got back into teaching dance. I decided the broadcast journalism career was not for me. It was too stressful. I'm too empathetic. I was feeling all the feelings when people's, you know, there'd be a murder, and I'd have to just write about it like it was nothing, and it was something. And I couldn't do that anymore. And I started teaching dance in public school, and I just loved it. I loved teaching teenagers. And then I decided, I think I want to start sharing yoga more, and got my teacher training and got the yoga therapy, and here I am.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. And can you tell me a little bit more about, like, specifically what you've done in the yoga space over the last couple of years, and that's led you to like where you are now?
Sure. Yeah. So I started hosting the Yoga Pro podcast in October of 2020. So I'm in my third season with that. Mm-hmm. I love doing that. I love having conversations. Can't wait to have you on. And just sharing information to elevate the profession of yoga, which I know that's what you do with your podcast too. And so I've been doing that. I work with people individually on confidence issues. A lot of people have a lot of fears that maybe they're not identifying or not really sure why they're not confident. They're just like, I don't feel comfortable making videos. I don't feel comfortable speaking in front of people. And I've done all of that and overcome my own imposter syndrome and my own childhood labels that put me in that space. And so I do that. I work with veterans in mental health clinic, and I work with dancers and athletes. And so most recently, a colleague of mine and I developed a workshop, Physical and Mental Wellbeing for Dancers, and we presented it in Northern California. And so we're working on expanding that and presenting that more, because there are so many dancers all around the world, but in the United States especially, that I know that we can help them feel better by helping them tune into their body interoceptively and teaching them about what their body really looks like on the inside, because we all have this idea of the skeletal model, but nobody looks like that. So yeah,
it's very true.
That's my focus now. And I'm doing a lot of writing. I have an article coming out in psych.co soon on yoga for emotional well-being. And so I'm enjoying collaborating. Two of the three things that I kind of do right now are collaborative. So I'm excited about that. And that was actually my word for this year. Oh, my word for this year was connection.
Connection. Oh, so, amazing.
Yeah.
It's so cool that you're like bringing that stuff in.
I know. Well, last year it was release. And I did a lot of releasing and a lot of self-studies, but yeah. And I think all of that prepared me for this year because I hit the ground running and have done a lot in a little over 2 months. So it's been really great.
Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. My word for 2022 was surrender, and my word for 2023 is ease.
Yeah. I like that. Well, you got to surrender to find ease. So you got them in the right order for sure.
Yeah. I gave birth last year and entered motherhood. So I had my first baby. So I felt like, okay, I need to surrender into this. I'm a little bit more of like a type A personality, and I type A personalities serve a function, I think, with birth and motherhood, but mostly I think you have to practice that surrender. And so I thought it was mostly around birth, and then have learned over the last year that I was just surrendering over and over again to what I thought things would be like. So it's been, yeah, really beautiful. But I love the practice of choosing a word. So it's really cool that you do that also.
Yeah. And congratulations on your new baby.
Ah, thanks. Yeah. And so one of the things I was curious about, and I kind of mentioned this earlier, I'd love to hear like how you've kind of managed your career, especially with moving around, because it sounds like you do a lot of work in person. I was kind of curious if maybe your business was more online, but how do you kind of manage, like, you know, if your husband's stationed somewhere, you know, you've got maybe a couple of years there building your clientele up. Like, it's a lot of work to do all of that, like get into the community, build your clients, start working with them, find new ones, and then move.
Right. Yeah, it does present quite a challenge. But I've been doing online work way before the pandemic. So I would do little workshops, 4 week, 6 week series for fibromyalgia or chronic pain or things like that. And I work with people individually, exclusively online. I don't have a studio space here. So that, and I've worked with people in London and, you know, all across the country. So that part of it is something that's pretty portable. The workshops are, that's a little bit different because my partner and I realized that maybe there might be times where one of us will facilitate the workshop if depending on where it's located. But we intend to travel a lot with it because it's something that really needs to be addressed. And something that I think a lot of dance teachers are craving right now. They're wanting to keep their kids safe and mentally and physically, and we can help them do that. So that will just be a matter of traveling to where the studios are, which can be from anywhere. And like I said, there might be a time where only one of us does it, depending on where it is, if it's closer to one or the other, because I think we're going to be bi-coastal. We don't know where we're going, but anyway, I don't want to talk about that right now. Struggle of a military spouse. You know what you're getting into. It's fine. But yeah, sometimes it can be like, oh.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you find a place you like, you build your community, you kind of make a home, and then, you know, maybe not necessarily at your own choice, you end up having to leave, which is hard.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, the flip side of that is when you're somewhere you don't like, you know, you're not going to be there that long. So you're going to get to move. So you just, it's how you look at it. And wherever we are, I always find all the cool stuff to do. And even in places where sometimes people don't like it or it's an unpopular duty station, I usually can find something positive about it and something that I go, well, yeah, I don't like this, but at least I have this. And yeah. So it's how you frame it, because you can sit and be miserable and think about all the stuff you don't like, or you can find one thing, something that you like about it and try to focus on that. Yeah. I mean, the bad stuff still kind of comes, but
yeah, that's life though, right? It's like, life's never going to just be all rainbows and butterflies and puppies, right? There's always going to be the darkness that creeps in and stuff. I think part of learning to like live well is learning to ride that wave a little bit.
Yeah. I talk about that a lot with my military clients about that wave. And I said, you know, it's what we hope is that the waves aren't crashing and huge and then pulling, you know, like when the tide goes way, 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 way out. What we want is that kind of easy riding the wave where we're kind of going up and we're going down. And the way we get there is in how we react to the crashing and the tide pulling out, you know, that tide going out. Sometimes it feels like the rug being pulled out from under us.
Yeah, for sure.
But sometimes if you just sit with that and you feel that water coming out from under you, I live near the beach, so forgive the beach metaphor, but you, when the tide's going out and you feel it and it feels like it's sucking you out to sea, it's really not. You're kind of sinking down into the sand. And what if you settled in and felt what that felt like instead of freaking out about the water going away from you? Mm-hmm. You know, when the waves are high, try to surf. Surfers look for the highest waves ever, right? So yeah, it doesn't make the bad stuff go away, but how we frame it or how we look at it can make a big, big difference in how we feel mm-hmm. when we're in those tough times.
Yeah, no, I really love that. I think that that's such an important life lesson. And I'm curious for you what it was like to take your business online kind of pre-pandemic. I know I was working online as well many years before the pandemic, and I feel like there was often people who would be like, what's a podcast? Or wait, you can teach yoga online? Or, you know, just a little bit of kind of confusion and uncertainty. So I'm kind of curious what that was like for you, like the first time you were like, okay, well, we could like do this over Skype, or we could do this over FaceTime, or, you know, whatever, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. It's funny because you hear people say, oh, well, I can't make a connection online. And I share this a lot, but Mark Walsh said one time I was in a workshop with him that I was one of the presenters. And I heard him say, if you couldn't make a connection through Zoom or on TV, why do people cry at movies? And in my case, commercials. You know, why do we cry when we see these things happening? It's because we're connected. So don't tell me that you can't make a connection online. Maybe you don't want to, or maybe you feel more comfortable in person. For me, I prefer taking yoga classes online. I love taking online classes. I think it's amazing for me to have access to teachers that I would never be able to take from. I love doing it in my sweatpants or my pajamas, even smelling like a goat. And then I can get done with yoga and go take my shower or my bath. I mean, I love online. And so it makes sense that I was doing it before. And when I was in yoga therapy school, one of our projects was to do a targeted group yoga therapy project. I was living somewhere new. I didn't know anybody. So I said, I'm going to do mine online. And they said, no, you can't do that. You can't do it online. You have to do it in person. People can't, you know, all of those arguments. So then the pandemic hits, and then every yoga therapy training is online. Every yoga teacher training is online. And I'm just sitting there going, well, I guess it does work. I guess online does work. But it's a lonely space to be. I think when you aren't going into work and you don't have colleagues, and I feel this way for yoga teachers and yoga therapists anyway, but especially when you're working in the online space, when you don't have peers that you're working with kind of continuously, it can be very lonely and isolating feeling. And so that's something that comes up for me when you ask what it's like. I think it can be kind of lonely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for sharing all of that. I definitely really resonate with everything that you said with online. Like, I think that, you know, I like the experience of practicing yoga in person, but I also love everything that you're talking about. Like, I know when the pandemic first hit and my kind of like, you know, go-to studio back in Canada closed, I was like, I can practice with you and I'm not there. Like, how amazing is that? And then as the pandemic progressed, it's like, oh, I can just like hop into a class at noon and I don't have to, like, it's not a whole ordeal, right? Like, it felt like a lot before to take an hour-long yoga class that took me 15 minutes on either side to get to. And, you know, there's obviously like need to get changed and get ready, get out the door on time. It's like a 2-hour thing that I was taking, that I would be taking from work. And that felt really overwhelming and kind of not possible. But just being able to like literally move rooms and just do it in the clothes I was wearing, like pajamas, sweatpants, t-shirt and shorts, whatever it was, I was like, oh, this is pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it removed a lot of barriers for some people who don't feel comfortable in a yoga studio space. And I think it gave a lot of people permission to just do yoga no matter what. You don't need fancy leggings or tank tops, and you don't have to have the best mat or whatever. You can do it on the carpet, and you can use some water bottles, or you can use a tie for a strap or whatever. You don't have to have all this stuff that we've been led to believe we need to do yoga.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. And my mom is actually a really interesting example of that. She was somebody who, she likes yoga. It's obviously makes her feel very good, but she's really self-conscious and she actually really doesn't like being touched. And, you know, I just encouraged her, like, tell the teacher that you don't want to be touched and they should be honoring that. And I don't think she ever had a problem where somebody kind of went against what she asked. She's just a little timid and kind of felt like, oh, you know, sometimes I can't do everything and I feel self-conscious, just like modifying in the class. And for her, online was great because she could turn her video off, you know, like she could keep it on if she wanted to. But if she was feeling kind of uncomfortable or self-conscious or couldn't do something or was just going to take like child's pose for a couple of minutes because she needed a break, she would just turn her video off. And it was amazing. She was practicing like 3 times a week and whatnot. And I was thinking, like, there's so many examples of people like that, right? That they don't necessarily feel at home in a studio, or they don't feel comfortable for whatever reason it is. And online gives them that comfort because they're in their house and they don't have to spend, not that you have to spend money on an outfit, but I think a lot of people think, oh, I need the right clothes to go to a yoga class. Like, they don't want to show up in baggy sweatpants and a baggy top when everyone else has their Lululemon matching set or whatever. Like it makes you feel extra self-conscious because you feel like you don't fit in, versus like being able to just do it at home is a huge opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would never show up in my Little Mermaid pajama pants. And but at my house, all bets are off.
Yeah. I took a prenatal class that was online, and that was like the best because I was literally like rolling out of bed with my gigantic belly and showing up in my pajamas. And I mean, quite honestly, near the end of my pregnancy, I don't think I would have even gone to the class. I would have practiced on my own or found something online. But yeah, I just was too big and tired to like leave my apartment, and like changing my clothes was such an ordeal that I spent most of my time in my pajamas. And it was amazing to just like show up to the class and whatnot. I didn't have to worry about how I looked or anything like that. So yeah, lots of opportunities there and whatnot. So really cool to hear that you've been doing that for ages and that you've been able to support your clients from wherever you are in the country. One thing I kind of wanted to loop around to, Pamela, is yoga therapy. You said that yoga therapy was transformative for you. I know a little bit about yoga therapy, and it's, you know, a beautiful practice. I've received the practice of it, and it always feels really good. It kind of feels like magic a little bit, even more than kind of yoga, because it's even more subtle. But I'd love to hear a little bit more about like what yoga therapy is, kind of how it works, how you teach it to your clients, all that good stuff.
It's funny that you said it's like magic, because my husband calls it that's my voodoo magic, which maybe that's not the best term, but he means it only in the best way. He's probably one of my biggest fans as far as these practices go. I remember the first time I put him in constructive rest and did a body scan with him. He was having hip trouble. He was lifting weights and he has these big leg muscles, but yet his hips were killing him. And I said, okay, we're going to do some things to address these tiny glute med muscles that are being neglected, and we're going to relax your psoas. So I put him in constructive rest, and you know, he told everybody, and he does it all the time, especially if he's really having a lot of pain. So the difference between yoga therapy, and I kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier, is yes, postures are important and we use them, but the predominant application is not just about that. one of the differences in yoga therapy and yoga teaching, and when I say this, to me, please don't think that I think there's no space for yoga teachers, because there are. Like I said, a $5 gym class with a yoga teacher saved my life. And so we need that too. Yoga therapy is more targeted. So when you go to see a yoga therapist, they're going to do an intake and assessment. You'll fill out a form just like you do at the doctor's office. We want to know what's going on with you physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. We want to know what your goals are, because whereas a yoga class, you go in, the teacher has a sequence, she's going to teach it. There may be modifications, but it's generally for the whole class. In yoga therapy, if you're in an individual session, we want to know what's going on with you and what do you want to happen? And then we design this practice based on your situation, what you're feeling, and what you need. If someone's having anxiety, you might want to do some movement before you try a meditation, because they're not going to be able to just plop down into a meditation. If someone's suffering from depression, you might want to do an energizing breath work to rev them up to get their nervous system going. Not everybody needs to be put into parasympathetic state. So part of yoga therapy is that assessment. We might test for muscle imbalances to see if you're having low back pain. Maybe your glute med is weak and it's not supporting you the way it should, or your transverse abdominals are weak and you need to have some real core strengthening, not what a lot of exercise people think is core. And then if you're dealing with a group, maybe you have a group of people who all have chronic pain. So you devise these practices, you still do the intake and assessment, and then you have a group practice for the common ailments of the group of people. Yoga therapy is at least 1,000 hours of training. And the difference, I think, between yoga therapists and yoga teachers is we're trained in physiology and pathology of disease and what contraindications there are for a lot of different physical, mental, emotional ailments. So that, I think, difference is pretty stark. But the main thing about yoga therapy is it's the application of the principles of yoga to bring about well-being. So I said all of that about physiology and pathology of disease, but it's more about empowering the client to feel better and to take whatever practices resonate and work and incorporate them, and letting them kind of lead the way by introducing them to all of these different things and then having them decide, oh yeah, this is what's working for me. I'm keeping this. I'm tossing this out. And before you know it, they have their own practice that they're doing every day. One of my military, so the IOP is an example of a group yoga therapy. I have intake. I know what each person is going through. And then I present these practices. And then I had this one guy, he was so resistant, didn't want to be there. He thought it was dumb. I don't know why I have to do yoga. And now he has a morning practice every day. He gets up, he does his breathing, he goes outside, he feels the sensations of the air. And so that idea that you can introduce these practices, the philosophical principles, to me are the most important thing. And I think those get glossed over a lot in yoga teaching, and not necessarily by negligence. Sometimes we're not really exposed to them as much in our 200 hour, because 200 hours isn't really that much time. And part of it is there's not time in a 50 minute class with a whole group of people to really do all of that. But you can bring in the idea of compassion towards yourself and others. You can bring in the idea of self-study or truthfulness. Those, the yamas and niyamas, you can bring those in subtly without having to make the whole class about it. And I kind of rambled a little bit. Sorry, I also have ADHD, so sometimes I get a little rambly. But yeah, I think the main difference of yoga therapy and yoga teaching is that attention to it's very client-centered as opposed to presentational.
Yeah. No, thanks for all those details. I think that that was super, super helpful and just got my mind going. I always think about this when I talk to people who are, you know, like yourself, have been in the industry a long time, you know, very educated, that 200 hours is just really not sufficient. it's really not enough for how much there is to learn with yoga. And I really don't think it's to the fault of the people that are presenting these trainings that we're not getting enough knowledge about things like business, for example, or yoga philosophy, because there really is just not enough time. And obviously, you know, as yoga teachers, it's our responsibility to dive deeper. But as you said, you know, 1,000 hours of training, I was like, I feel like that's kind of what we all need, because it's like we get this mixed bag of people coming to our classes and we're trying to support them all at once, which is a really hard thing to do, which is how we get kind of these like general all levels vinyasa flow classes. Yet it's like being able to serve, you know, the athlete in the back and, you know, the pregnant person in the front and the person whose body is achy because they sit in a chair all day at a desk and the person who's been recommended by their doctor because maybe they've got an autoimmune condition. You know, being able to support all those people is so tricky when you're not trained in that way, right? And it sounds like with yoga therapy, you really get to learn a little bit more deeper about how to support those people and how to support them in a bigger way that's not just the postures, which is something I really connect with and I really love. I feel like the longer I practice yoga, the less and less my practice and my teaching looks like the postures. It's just so different, right? I feel like sitting and breathing can be as impactful, if not more impactful, than doing sun salutation A for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or just sitting outside and looking at the trees.
Mm-hmm.
That can be transformational. But I was going to say, you said all levels. I've never been to an all levels class that was truly all levels.
I mean, how can it be, right?
It can't. It can't. So that I feel like is a problem in the industry. Mm-hmm. Is if you want to really serve, you need to be specific. This is a beginner class and make it a real beginner class. This is for experienced yoga practitioners, whatever. Because if you say all levels and someone who's truly a beginner with a heart condition comes in and you've got the room heated to 100 degrees, that person's not going to be served and they may be harmed.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain postures that people with high blood pressure should never do.
Yeah.
Right. So, and I hate to use the word never, but should most likely not do.
Yeah.
So if you don't know that, you don't know, right? You weren't taught that. I have to give myself grace every day for things that I learn that are different than what I thought I knew. and some of the things that I've said in my yoga teaching, I'm like, God, I can't believe I said that. What in the heck was I thinking? But I was thinking this is what I was told. And so this is what I did. So when I'm saying this, I'm also saying it with a lot of grace and compassion. We do what we think we know. But when we know better, we do better.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. If you have a class label, then make it fit that label. And I don't think there's any universe in which a pregnant person, a heart disease, and a high-level athlete can all get the same experience in a class. There I said.
Yeah. Yeah. You heard it here first.
I mean, I'm not the first person to say that. But it definitely, I think we have to get away from trying to please everybody and trying to get everybody to come into the class. No. Have smaller classes that are directly targeting the people that need to be there. They're going to mm-hmm. be happier. They're going to tell their friends. And eventually, you'll have more of those people. But if someone goes in and they have a bad experience in your yoga class, then it affects all of us. It affects our whole industry. Because if I had a dollar for every time I said to someone, oh, I think I could help you with that low back pain with just a little bit of yoga. Oh, I tried yoga. It's not for me. If I had a dollar for every time I heard someone say that, I wouldn't even need to teach yoga. Because
many people have
had bad experiences.
Yeah, 100%. And I feel like one thing for me as a yoga teacher is like the idea of people getting injured in yoga is really upsetting to me, especially because we've made so much progress with you know, allopathic doctors recognizing yoga as something that can be beneficial. I think the problem is that, again, going to these like all levels, quote unquote, vinyasa flow classes is probably not what a lot of these people need. And it's really hard for the teacher to support them, like we've talked about. And then it's like, you know, they go, it's too hard, it's too hot. Maybe they feel uncomfortable. They didn't show up wearing what everyone else was wearing. They can't do a lot of it, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, that's where you end up with the people who are like, oh, I tried yoga, it's not for me. And one thing I was thinking as you were talking was, I have a client that I'm working with right now doing business coaching, and she teaches seniors, and finding teachers who are really, truly able to teach seniors and meet them where they are is something that is a challenge. And she's like, you know, these subs will come in from these like agencies and they have them on all fours. And she's like, 85-year-olds can't get down to the ground and be on all fours.
They can't get back up.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times they can't even get down there. And then certainly if they do get down, there's a lot of them that need assistance getting back up, or they've had knee replacements or their knees are bad. And it's just like all fours, I think, for a lot of us, especially if you are younger, if you're able-bodied, you're like, oh, it's like a basic yoga pose, right? You go on all fours, maybe do some cat cows, maybe you like do some balance, extend some your arms and your legs. You can do like some side stretches from there. Like there's a lot you can do from all fours. Yet it's like recognizing that for certain groups of people, all fours is not even accessible. And I think this is where, kind of like you were saying, we really need to hone in on who we want to teach, who we want to serve, and stop trying to serve everyone, because that's certainly not functioning. It's not working. And I don't think it's helping any of us as yoga teachers, because it's ending up with people injured or feeling like yoga is not for them. And you can tell me how you feel about this, but I truly feel like yoga is for everyone. You know, it can be for everyone. Like I think every human on this planet could get something from the practice of yoga, whether that's learning to breathe deeper or learning to feel comfortable with your eyes closed, or yeah, feeling the sensations of the wind or the sun on your skin, you know, all the way through to like headstands and arm balances. There's a million things we can learn and take away.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yoga is for everyone, but I think you really have to, like, you have to read the room. Mm-hmm. Right. If you go into a bedside yoga in a hospital, so there's yoga therapy, there's bedside yoga. You go in someone's room, you can't have a preconceived idea of what you want to do with them. Mm-hmm. Because if they have pneumonia, emphysema, and you're thinking, oh, I'm going to do a big breath work, that might not be what they can handle. Mm-hmm. Maybe they just need a visualization, a meditation that puts them in a space of joy and takes them back to a time where they felt good. Maybe someone who is suffering from, oh gosh, what am I gonna say? Well, okay, let's take someone who is suffering from depression. Mm-hmm. And they just feel so hopeless and lost. Maybe you do an energizing breath work with them. Maybe you do Adi Mudra, a hand gesture that kind of brings in a sense of peace and calm. And that can be 5 minutes that can change their life.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be complicated. I remember in yoga therapy school, one thing that I had to relearn was stop trying to do everything. It doesn't have to be that complicated. Don't give people too much to think about, to try to do. And I always say to people when they're like, am I doing this right? Like, don't stress about the yoga. Yoga should not be causing you stress. If you're doing it, you're doing it right. If mm-hmm. if you're breathing, maybe you want to breathe deeper. Maybe you don't. Maybe you want to address the thoughts that are coming into your head. Maybe you don't. Maybe you just recognize them and then say, you know, I'm not dealing with you right now. People think meditation is clearing your mind, and I can't meditate because I can't clear my mind. Well, newsflash, yeah. Nobody can.
Yeah.
You're doing it right if you're doing it. And this idea that things have to look a certain way or feel a certain way is so, it's really harmful. Mm-hmm. Because if you have someone whose body is shaped in a different way that makes having their knees and their feet parallel in chair pose, you could be causing harm by telling them to do that when their body naturally kind of turns out some. So basically you're asking them to kind of grind in their knee just to get parallel.
Right.
So this idea of the body looks a certain way in certain postures, it really needs to go as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that. Thanks for sharing that. And I feel like I could pick your brain about this stuff all day, but I'm curious.
We could talk for 2 hours. I'm a chatty.
No. Yeah. Same. I'm a chatty one as well. I'm curious though, do you have any business lessons that you've learned through your career that you want to share with listeners today before we wrap up?
Mm-hmm. Put yourself out there. So many people don't want to make videos. They don't want to speak in front of people. They're happy teaching a yoga class, but speaking at the Rotary Club or a doctor's office about what yoga can do. And a side note, we all need to be speaking to doctors about yoga and telling them, yes, yoga is great, but this kind of yoga is what heart patients need. This kind of yoga is what mental health. There's this idea. Doctors are finally coming around to recognizing it and saying, go do yoga. But they tell their heart patient, go do yoga. They stumble into a Bikram class. And I love Bikram, but that's not where that person needs to be.
Right.
They don't need to be in a heated room doing those kinds of postures. So yes, I sidetracked. Go talk to all the doctors, you know, tell them about yoga, but tell them there are different types of yoga that are better for certain types of people. Put yourself out there. Learn to be on camera. You want to be able to go on your local TV station and talk about the benefits of yoga. That's going to get you more business. You want to be able to go on podcasts and do interviews. That's going to expose more people to you. And the more they hear you speak or see you on camera, the more they feel like they know you and the more they're going to like you. If they don't like you, that's okay. They're not your clients. Take it out of me, my ego, how I feel, I'm scared, whatever. Those fears are deep in that root chakra and they really have nothing to do with you being on camera in your business. Those are fears that are kind of holding you back in a way that aren't successful. They're not good. Mm-hmm. So get past that idea of being afraid and being, and I know it sounds easy for me to say, but that's a whole hour long podcast. But get past those fears of it being about me, and put yourself in the space of how am I serving them? How am I, what value am I bringing to someone by making this video or doing this podcast? How am I serving that person who needs to hear what I have to say? And I'm the only person that they're going to really hear it from and resonate with. Mm-hmm. Because we've all heard something 15 times and then one person says it and we're like, oh yeah, yeah, that makes sense. Oh, I get it. So there, you're that person for somebody. You are the person that's going to make the difference in their life, but you're not going to do it if they don't know about you and if they are not resonating with you. And they're going to do that by you being on camera. Maybe even you decide, okay, I'm finally going to go live on Instagram or Facebook or whatever. And you start out saying, hey, I'm here. I'm showing up. I'm a little nervous. This is my first time doing videos. It's not your first time presenting yoga. You know what you're doing. So have the confidence in the things that you know about and then be vulnerable. Say, this feels awkward to me. Let me take a deep breath and use my tools. And you're modeling for them what yoga is. So yeah, I could talk for hours about it.
Yeah, no,
that I think is the quick version.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. Those are all really great nuggets of wisdom. And I feel like this whole conversation has been amazing. It's just had so much goodness weaved through it. So I'm really grateful for your time. Can you share with listeners where they can go to find you if they want to follow along with you, follow your journey, get to know you more, all that good stuff?
Sure. Yeah. You can find me on Instagram at Gratefully Pamela. And it's a picture of me in a pink shirt with a turquoise background. My website, I have the yogapropodcast.com. And then my business website is interoceptiveperformance.com. I can give you the links for the show notes. That last one was a long one, but you can find me at theyogapropodcast.com pretty easily. Send me an email if you have any questions about anything I said. If you want to come at me about something I said, send me an email or DM me on Instagram. I respond to every DM myself. So if you send me a message, say, hey, connect.
Amazing. Whatever. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time today and for everything that you shared. This conversation has been really great.
Well, thanks for having me. And I can't wait to have you back.
Yeah, I'm excited to chat with you on your show.
All right, friends, I hope that you enjoyed that episode of the podcast. As always, if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, make sure you reach out, info@mbmyoga.com. You guys know I always love to hear from you. And a big thank you to Pamela for coming on the show. Make sure you go check her out, give her a follow, see what she's up to, learn from her. She's so knowledgeable, like I've mentioned so many times on this episode already. She's just really, really great. And of course, a big thank you to Offering Tree for sponsoring this episode. Make sure you go check them out, offeringtree.com/MBO. If you have any questions about whether or not they might be the right fit for you, make sure you reach out to myself or to them. Always happy to chat about Offering Tree. And a big thank you to you for listening to this episode of the show. Thank you for supporting the podcast. I truly couldn't do it without the amazing listeners out there. So thank you so much for being here. All right, that's all from me. I will see you next week. Bye for now. Thank you so much for tuning in for this episode of the podcast. To find links, notes, resources, and everything mentioned in today and all episodes of the show, you can head on over to mbomyoga.com. You can find the podcast and myself on Facebook and social media at Mastering the Business of Yoga. And I would love for you to join the private Facebook community, Yoga Business Badasses. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, please make sure you reach out to me at info@mbomyoga.com. And last of all, if you enjoyed this episode of the show, please make sure you hit subscribe and leave a review for the podcast. It would mean the world. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next week. Namaste.